Yes, yes, good people. It's that time again. You're listening to me, Shane Sandiford, in the shack. So today, I brought in a guy I've known for many years. And this guy's going to tell us his story about the trials and tribulations he's faced and the sheer perseverance he's shown to get through. So without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Timothy Harris.
So I'm here today, myself, Shane Sandiford, with my good friend, very, very good friend for many a year, Timothy Harris. Tim is a pioneer. I want to call him a pioneer in everything that he does. And when he sets his mind on something, it usually happens. He's always been a very supportive person for me when I've been going through struggle and stuff. He's always reached out. So I thought it's true. I think you know, you're one of the people that first sprung to mind when I thought about doing this and having a conversation with you. So it's an honour and a pleasure to have you on the Shack. How are you?
Good to be here. Thank you, Shaq. I'm good. Just enjoying lockdown, you know. That's what we want to talk about.
Enjoying it. A lot of people, I'm seeing a lot of people going slightly crazy, and you're kind of one of the first people to say you're enjoying it. So I love that.
Well, what I've been, you know, this is the topic of conversation we're having most people at the moment, isn't it? About what you're doing in lockdown and stuff. But I think I'm taking it as an excuse to spend more time with the family.
Yeah.
And the best thing is, so I've got twin daughters that are 5 years old, they're at school. And just using this as an excuse, we're obviously educating them at home and everything. And this is just, it's nice to be involved in their education and actually watch them learn, watch their learning process and teach them. Because you only see that. They go into school, they come back, they could do something new. Yeah. But watching them develop and learn that, I think, is something that you don't usually, unless you're actually homeschooling. I'm really taking, me and Sarah are taking quite a lot of pleasure in doing that. And every day, I think I spoke to you the other day, didn't I? I said, you know, I've got to take myself off for half an hour a day or something, get a peace and quiet and everything. But I call it my man time.
Yeah, you've got to have man time. Have to have man time, I think.
You've got to have that. Yeah.
You've got to start.
So, I'm actually enjoying it, you know, spending time as a family. You look forward all year to the holidays, and then when the holidays come around, you spend all the time with family, so we just get there for a bit longer.
Yeah, obviously,
I miss everyone and all that kind of stuff and the freedoms we usually get, but you got to make the most of the situation we're in, I think.
Most definitely. And so you said you've got two daughters. I've been seeing on your Instagram, like, you've literally got them running obstacle courses.
We've got hurdles, ladders, cones, parachute now. You seen a parachute?
Yeah.
And balls, all of that. Like, you can get off Amazon, so cheap, comes next day, and the girls just love it.
Wow, that's wicked. How's the little boy?
Freddie is, he's fun. He's, how old is he? 16 months. He just toddles about in his own little world, tries to follow the girls everywhere, tries to do whatever the girls are doing. He's just funny, man. But he's teething. He's a really late teether, so his sleep pattern's not that great. But he's just so happy, so jolly, like proper full of joy all the time, and we have a lot of fun. It's juggling him and the girls, schooling the girls at the same time, is tricky. But
yeah.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's what they say. And you know, we used to play basketball together at school, and you know, you're definitely a team player. I remember you having a go at me one time for not playing defense. I'll never forget. Tim was on the sideline. And I was like, oh, why should I? And he was just like, that's not good. That's not the right attitude to have, Shane.
Starting at the GB, the national player.
Oh, but no, yeah, I'm happy to hear that everything's well with the family.
We do deliveries to our grandparents, to the kids' grandparents, like food deliveries and stuff. They're getting some food delivered from Sainsbury's and that, but there's some stuff they can't get, so we go and pick some stuff up and we drive to our different grandparents to take the girls with us and stuff. And I don't know if that's part of me think like some of the grandparents, it must be really hard because they can see them through the window and wave and like say I love you and everything, but then they just definitely want to give their grandchildren a cuddle or whatever.
Yeah, most definitely.
It's tough
all around. But you're coping. You're making it work, which is the key to this, you know, learning how to cope in these situations. And I think, you know, you always seem to be able to make things work, Tim. I don't know what it is about you, but you always seem to make
things work. Things do seem to go my way more often than maybe I'm allowed to have them.
Going up with your thoughts in the mouth, mate. Just keep doing you, man. You are a beautiful soul. So we're going to talk a little bit quickly about your gym. So Timothy Harris is quite the, I want to say entrepreneur. Can I say that?
You can say that.
Yeah, he's quite the entrepreneur. So Tim, you must be what? I want to say 5 or 6 years. Is it longer than that?
No, so we had the gym, it opened January 2014. January 2015.
Okay, see, yeah.
No, it was 2014, it was before the girls were born.
Okay.
Just after marriage, so 2014, yeah. So we had it for 6 years.
So you've been running, operating out of Welling Garden City, a franchise for Anytime Fitness. Am I allowed to say their name out loud? Yeah, I'm allowed to say their name out loud. They're not going to do this. But you own the franchise, so it's your franchise. So, yeah, we'll say whatever we like. But, yeah, Tim owns a franchise of Anytime Fitness in Welling Garden City. So if there's anybody local, I used to work there as well. I used to go there. Great gym. It's got everything you need. And, yeah, how did that come about?
So 6-7 years ago, I trained qualified as a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Was looking for jobs, couldn't get what I wanted. And this is when me and Sarah first started going out as well.
Okay.
She was doing a master's, I think, and I was trying to get jobs as PT. And eventually, I got a job at Anytime Fitness in Hampstead. And it was quite a new brand in the country. There's like 1,000 at the time, I think it was 1,400 around the world, but there was only about 10 in the country. And one of them was in Hampstead, so it wasn't very well known. But the headquarters for the franchise were next door to the gym. So one of the personal training people in there, the salesmen that were selling franchises to people would be showing potential franchisees around the gym all the time, just come around and they'd be like, oh, this is Tim, he's one of the personal trainers here, how'd you find it, blah 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 blah. And like years before that, like growing up in school and everything, you know, we do dream of doing whatever when you're older. And one of my dreams had been to own my own gym. But you just think, you know, is that serious? Is that a realistic dream? Like you think about how you can do it and stuff. And I didn't think it was ever realistic. And then I was a personal trainer. When I trained as a personal trainer, the last day of the training, we had to go around the whole room. There's about 30 of us in the room. And the guy running it said, in a year, where do you want to be? Or in 5 years, where do you want to be and stuff? And in my head, I'm going, I want to own my own gym. But I can't say that in front of all these people because they're going to laugh at me. It's ridiculous, you know. It's one of these preposterous things that you dream of, but it's just never going to happen. But then there was this massive black guy next to me called, I think it was called Jermaine, like 6'6", security guard at Arsenal football ground kind of thing. Like real, real funny guy there. And he just goes, he went before me, he goes, I want to own my own TV channel. And then everyone laughed at that because he's a funny guy. But he was like, no, I'm serious. This is where I want my thing to go. So I was like, well, if he said that, I can say my thing. So I said, I want to own the gym. And I got this job at Anytime Fitness and they were showing these people around. So I just grabbed one of the sales guys and said, can I get one of the information packs about opening my own gym? Opening Anytime Fitness. And he said, yeah, of course. Like, completely serious. I thought he'd be like, what? You can't open a gym. You're just a personal trainer kind of thing. He's a serious businessman. He was like, no, of course. Here's the thing. And I looked at it. I spoke to my friend Greg, who ended up becoming my business partner about it. I spoke to my parents about it. And we just said, all right. It took a year. I think it took 3 months from first talking about it, getting a pack, before we signed the franchise agreement. Because we had to meet with them, discuss it, talk about money options, everything. And then it took a year from signing the franchise agreement to opening the gym.
Wow.
So it took about 15 months total from deciding that's what I wanted to do with them and getting the information pack to the gym actually opening. So it made it work. Yeah, it was good.
It's amazing. So throughout the process, I mean, throughout that year, were there times where, I don't know, I want to say that you felt it wasn't going to happen?
Plenty of times. Like you, and this is where you see like people opening their businesses and stuff, like real big entrepreneurs and stuff. And they're saying, when you first start off, you will doubt yourself every other day. And then the next day you'll go, no, of course this is going to work. I can make this happen. And then I'm the whole way through, you're going, if I open a gym, who's going to come to my gym? Why would anyone want to come to my gym kind of thing? You're doubting yourself. And you think, actually, it works in other places. It's the gym, blah, blah, blah. So you're constantly up and down, up and down, up and down. And then around the same time that I'd asked about this and we were doing the negotiating, I proposed to Sarah. So we were getting married in the September, and then the pre-sale for the gym was starting in November. So we had quite a lot going on. And then we got married in September, and it was all up and down then. It was like, because we had to negotiate the lease on the property. And it was taking forever. It was going up and down, up and down, up and down. And in the end, we got that done. We got married. And then the council said we couldn't have planning permission for as long as we wanted. So after 8 weeks waiting for them saying, no, it's going to be fine. It will go through. They put a clause in there, which meant it wouldn't have been commercially viable. And I actually cried on that day. I literally cried. Like, it was Sarah's birthday. We were setting up the, I was with my dad at the shopping center where it is, setting up the pre-sale site because we had a little unit to sell.
Yeah, I remember.
Out of. And then we got the planning through, and my dad was with me, and we're like, yeah, the planning's come through. And my dad said, but there's a clause in it that means you can only have it temporarily for 3 years. And we're like, oh, that's strange. Spoke to Greg. Greg's like, there's no guarantee we can make our money back. It's not commercially viable for 3 years. We can't make our money if we just open for 3 years, because they could shut us down after 3 years. And then we have to spend money on shutting it down and returning it to normal. Like, we can't do it. My dad was with me, and I think he sensed how upset I was. He went home. I went home. Sarah was at work, and it was her birthday. And like I remember I was in our living room, and I saw her drive in, and I just went to the door, and I was just crying, man. I was so upset. And then, but Greg just wouldn't give up. So the next day we spent the whole day. We were calling counsellors. We called Grant Shapps. We called all these people. They couldn't believe the decision that had been made. And we managed to. They couldn't just change it and say, no, that's not right, you can have it permanently. But we managed to extend it to 5 years.
Okay.
From 3 to 5 years, which is commercially viable. And we then managed to extend it. So we actually got it done. So this was all going on. That was just after I got married. So that added another 8 weeks. Yeah. So completely just... So the pre-sale lasted 3 months. And in that 3 months, so in the December... We opened at the end of January. In the December, me and Sarah found out we were pregnant. And then the gym opened at the end of January. And then at the end of February, we found out it was twins. Went for the scan, found out it was twins. So we had to move house. We had to move house again because we needed somewhere much bigger. Luckily, the gym worked out. Otherwise, I don't know what we would have done. The gym worked out. So the gym worked out. The girls were born in August, but 2 months before the girls were born, that was when I found out I had the hole in my heart and it was going to need some kind of correction. So found out, girls were born, and then I think in September or October, I got a letter from the doctor after meeting with a professional who said I definitely would need open heart surgery in London. In September, October, they said, oh yeah, we've got a date for you on January the 6th. So January the 6th, when the girls were 4 months old, I went to London and had my open heart surgery. And then I lived with my parents for, I think, 5 or 6 weeks after that, like drugged up, high as a kite, like Sarah was a single mum for like 5 or 6 weeks, coming and visit me with the girls and that. And then I think 4 or 5 months after that, we moved house again because we needed somewhere. The girls had outgrown the place that we had in St. Albans, so we had to move to somewhere bigger. We moved house again.
Wow.
So that was like the busiest. So that was about 18 months of just...
just constant...
insanity, non-stop. Yeah. Real wow. insanity. It wow. was like, but I was just like, you know, I got to 30. My 30th birthday was then.
Yeah.
I'd opened my own business. Me and Sarah had bought a house. I'd had two, we had two children. All kind of lead, I was like, oh, I've ticked all this stuff off by the time I'm 30. And then they're like, yeah, now you're 30, you've got to have open heart surgery, mate.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about this because I remember like literally walking into seeing you. I think I was I playing or I was watching. And I saw you walk
you were,
in.
You were probably injured, mate. Let's be honest about it. You were watching. You were there. You were there hobbling along, watching your team.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, let's be honest. Yeah, I was probably injured. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, I remember you walking in. And I'm like, yo, you there with the girls.
Well, they're looking quite skinny probably at the time. Looking
very skinny. And you were like, I think, no, that's right. I texted you a couple of days before. And you're like, yeah, I'm good, just out of open heart surgery. I was like...
I was pretty casual with it.
How are you being so flippant about this, man? Like, what do you mean open heart surgery? But then I saw you at Oakland's College, and I'll never forget, as long as I live, you literally just lifted up your T-shirt and I just saw this scar literally about...
I think it's about 10 inches. That's the top of it.
Yeah. So, like, 30th birthday, you've ticked all the boxes, all the bits off, and then you get, yeah. How did they find this hole in your heart?
Oh, so around the so I knew I had an irregular heartbeat, and I'd been to the doctor about that before, and I had something called a right bundle branch block, which is where so you've got two bundles that go down your of I don't know what they are, but when the electric current goes down your heart when it beats. Bundles send the electricity back to the top so it can beat again, and then it goes up and beats again.
Yeah.
But one of mine, my left one is blocked, so only one of mine works to keep my heart beating. And I went to the doctor when I was about 18, and they said, no, it's fine, you know, it's not irregular, people have it, you can live a happy life with it, kind of thing. And then I went to when I was working at the gym, and we had the kids come and everything, and there was a lot of stresses in my life. Kind of thing, a lot of things going on, and I started to get like mild palpitations.
Okay.
And I remember being in the gym office, and I looked it up on the online, like, you know, the self-diagnosis thing, what you need to do. And I must have ticked the wrong box somewhere because it said, you're having a heart attack. You call 999. I was like, I'm not having a heart attack. Anyway, I went to the doctor, and they do the thing where they put the little pads on you, like an electric ECG. And they did that, and he said, all I can see is you've got an irregular heartbeat, but that's probably because of the bundle branch block.
Mm.
And then he said, I'll send you. He goes, I'm 50-50 whether to send you on, but I will. And so I had to have a 24-hour heart rate monitor, that just showed the same kind of thing. And then I did an ultrasound. And they did the ultrasound, and then I went in to see the doctor after. And they asked these questions. They're like, do you get out of breath going up the stairs? Do you get out of breath very often? Do you get this? Do you get that? Or everything. And I'm just like, well, yeah, sometimes, but I'm quite active. And I'm thinking, right, he's asking these questions. So there's probably nothing wrong. And he's like, oh, because we have found a hole in your heart. And I knew when a baby's in the womb, it has a hole in the heart because the blood obviously doesn't need to go to the lungs, so it passes across and goes back around the body. So I said, oh, is it one of them? He said, no, this is a different one. That one's healed up. This one's just one between the chambers that just never formed properly. And it meant it would affect one of my valves. So one of my valves was leaking blood back up into it. And then it was going across as well. So one side of my heart was about 30% bigger than it needed to be because it'd been working so much harder.
Wow.
And me and Sarah were both in the doctor's thing. Sarah was about 6 or 7 months pregnant. And he said, this might, they might just, we'll send you to the grown up congenital heart thing because this is something I was born with.
Yeah.
in London, and they might just want to monitor you, they might give you some drugs, or they might want to correct it. And I said, oh, would that just mean, you know, correction, like, you know, when they go up through an artery and put a stent in, thinking, oh, you know, that's not too much. And he just looked through and said, no, it'd be open heart surgery. And Sarah, like, I looked at Sarah, and then I don't remember anything else. Like, you know those adverts? I think there's an advert where the patient gets told that they've got cancer, and the room just goes into a blur.
Yeah.
I was like that. I was just... And so we left. We were both quite quiet. Like, rung the people that need to know, like, family members and stuff. Yeah. And then we got our appointment for the doctor. But Sarah had had the girls by this point, so I took my dad to go to the doctor in London. This is a professor, he's a world-renowned specialist. The girls were 2 weeks old. We went to this guy in London. I took my dad, and he's not always there because he teaches people about this stuff around the world. He's like one of the world's best. And he had 7 medical students behind him. And... because they're examining him, they're watching him, they're learning from the master, so to speak. He takes my top off, he lies me down, and he feels it, and he gets them in one at a time to feel it, to make sure they can feel it and stuff. And then I go for different scans and stuff, and I come back, and he says, oh, yeah, we'd advise you need to have open heart surgery within 6 to 12 months. And again, I'm just like, what? My dad's very pragmatic. So he's sitting there, he's got a little notepad and a pen and stuff, and he's asking all the proper questions while I'm just trying not to cry again, man. And then I've got an audience of people that I'm just like, I've just been told my, you know, this thing in front of the sales. I went into the toilets afterwards and I did cry in the hospital toilet, man. It was tough. I don't know if my dad realized or not. But then we went home, and I had a cuddle with the girls and stuff. And then 4 months later, I had the surgery.
See, like, how, oh, mate, I couldn't imagine. I'm lost for words, mate. Like, your whole life must have flashed before your eyes in that moment. Like, I'm getting emotional. The sheer kind of like magnitude of that information, like you said, the room just went blurry. So like for me, I know, like I remember when Blake was born, I don't know if I ever told you, but he had like hyperspadias and they weren't sure what sex he was when he was first born.
Maturity. Because he was so premature.
And like literally, like I can remember kind of like just kind of hearing white noise, like someone just kind of, but I knew everything, like as long as he's healthy and he's cool, he's like to be told, yeah, you have to have open heart surgery. My head would have jumped to the complications first and like what happens if I don't get through. Did those?
Well, So we had a meeting with a surgeon. And I think we had to go back before, probably, I went with Sarah. I'm not sure if we'd had the girls by then or not. We went to meet the surgeon. That was the only time I ever met him conscious. I met the surgeon. It was before the thing, because the next time I met him, he's cutting me open and pulling me apart. And then I met his assistant after, a Russian guy. But he said, there's a 97, you know, it's basically, there's 99.8% chance or something of this being absolutely fine. There's a 97% chance, there's like a 2.5% chance or something that you might need to have a pacemaker fitted during the surgery, which I wouldn't, you know, that's not the end of the world kind of thing. So there was really, really slim chance of fatality.
Yeah.
And he said, and they just said, you know, the small palpitations you're getting, they last for like a couple of seconds. They'll start to last for tens of seconds. Then they'll start to last for minutes. And then they'll start to, you know, your way of life will change. You'll have to sit in a chair most of the day kind of thing. So
yeah.
It definitely made sense to have it and have it now while I was young.
Yeah.
Or youngish and able to recover much better from it. So you kind of weigh these things up. But then what the thing that did afterwards, after I had the surgery, because Sarah came with me and they the hospital arranged a bed for her. I had to go in the day before. They arranged a bed in a hotel down the road for her the night before the surgery, so she could come and see me in the morning.
Yeah.
Before I went in for the surgery. But then, so after she came to see me in the morning, they'd already given me my anti-anxiety drug. I can never remember the name, but it, like, they're just like, you need to take this pill because it will calm you down. Sarah's just told me it's called diazepam. And it just makes you feel drunk. Like, she came in and I'm just like, whee! And the doctor's like, the doctor's like, I had to shave myself in certain places in case they needed to put emergency tubes and stuff. So they're asking me this and stuff. And then they said that I'd take my wedding ring off. And we'd only been married just over a year and everything. And that's, I got quite emotional. We said goodbye and everything, but they said I could keep my wedding ring. They'd just tape it out. And then they took me into a cupboard and they filled me with drugs. I fell asleep and I don't remember much. But Sarah said she literally went back to the hotel they put her up in. And she was just thinking, her thoughts were, have I just said goodbye to my husband? You know, have I just become a widow? I'm getting emotional. But like that's the kind of thing, the level we're talking about, I think. So yeah, it was tough. It was tough. But I just, you know, we joined a new church at that point and we had a lot of support, a lot of prayer, a lot of support. So we were pretty sure that, pretty hopeful that everything was going to be okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, leading on nicely to my next question, your faith, like, I guess it's in moments like that, you really kind of know, like, people of faith kind of really have something to hold on to. And I guess in this situation, you lent on God.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And like, you know, we'd had a lot of people praying for us and all this kind of stuff. And we'd just joined a new church and we'd fallen straight into it. It was like a young church. And so we knew everyone in there and we'd had a lot of support, a lot of prayer. After I came out, they'd arranged a 2-week meal rota. So they're bringing us meals every evening.
Yeah.
Come check in and stuff. The pastor came to visit me at hospital in London and a few other people in the church and stuff. So we got a lot of support. Yeah. And we were, you know, it'd be pretty tough to go into that situation having 4 month old daughters and stuff. And then you just got to hope for the best, haven't you?
Like, yeah.
So yeah, it was tough, but yeah, I had something to lean on. You know, you don't have to be happy about the situation, but you can be happy throughout it because you've got something bigger, you've got a bigger picture, something to lean on.
Yeah. Your faith. So you're Christian. I guess, yeah. Do you have any words of wisdom for people going through, like, through this COVID, this COVID-19, I think what I want to do is kind of get people's, you know, their identities through this. And, you know, I know that your faith is a big part of your identity. So, yeah, do you have, like, going through this coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic, what do you have any words of wisdom, words of faith, words of encouragement for people who are, you know, finding things difficult?
I don't know. I wish you'd prepped me for this.
Nah, mate. I'm catching everybody off guard.
That's a massive question, isn't it? I don't know. I think, you know, the thing that in mine and Sarah's marriage, we've always been Christians as long as we've been married. Like, you know, my history of being a Christian up and down throughout my life. But with Sarah throughout that, we've always had God. Might sound strange to some people, but we consider God to be at the centre of our marriage. That's, you know, there's three people in a Christian marriage. That's why you get married in the church and you do the promise in front of God and stuff. So there's three of us involved, me, Sarah, and God. And you just, we just hold on to that kind of, you know, we pray together, do some Bible dedications together. You know, we thank God that we've got our family, we've got our health, we've got our house. There's a lot of things to be thankful for in this time, I think. Yeah. So we just kind of try and focus on that, and that's what keeps us really full of joy, as Sarah would put.
Try
to be full of joy,
Yeah, man. Okay, I love that. I love that. Timothy, man. Bro, you've just, you've left me like dumbfounded, bamboozled, and really emotional. But I just want to say one thing, man. I said it at the beginning, you have been a total rock for me through some of my darkest times. And I'm not going into great detail because it's not about me today, but I just wanted to take this time just to say thank you for just being a good friend. More than a friend. You're more than a friend. For being a brother. I appreciate you, man. Like, if no one's told you that today, I appreciate you.
I appreciate it. Cheers,
man. I love you. Like, big time. Now enough of that sentimental stuff.
It's nice. We don't do that enough. No one does that enough.
It's true. It's true.
And what you're doing now is you're giving permission to other men. This is something, and we do it by text. We're always texting each other saying we miss each other.
Yeah,
I love you, all that kind of thing. But we don't as men do that, and we should should. And this is what we learn from women in our life. It's fine to be like that, for sure. Yeah. So I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot.
Like I say, through some of the darkest periods of my life, man, you've just been there constantly. Like you're a constant. So yeah. But back to the gym. This is where like our bromance really started. Not really started, but I think it kind of went to a new level.
Yeah, because we've been more acquaintances. We were friends in school. We played basketball and got together. But then there was a period of
nothingness.
Shane and Tim apart, and you know we'd catch up. We'd see each other out and that.
Yeah.
But then we started going to the gym together a bit, didn't we?
Yeah. So Tim. Tim educated me about certain things. So like when we were at school, he was quite skinny, and to be fair, I was quite skinny as well. But I remember I like signing up for this guy's gym, and he'd seen me walking through. He said, "You haven't been to my gym," and I was like, "Yeah, I know." And he goes, "You're looking a bit fat." I was like, "Yeah, I know." He's like, "Come on, Saturday mornings, let's have it." So I was like, "Yeah, cool." So yeah, Saturday mornings, me, you, and Quinny.
But what you are failing to say, Shane, is that I've been training for about 3 or 4 months at that point and was pretty happy with my progress. And then within it was less than a month, you were as strong as me. And
no, not quite. Not in that chest. My chest has always been weaker, but like
but you had a weak shoulder, like everything else. And I was just like, come on, like. And I spoke to your brother and he was the same. He was livid. It was just like, that man just has to look at a dumbbell. And it's so upsetting for us regular people to have a genuine Superman just like,
come on. No, pull-ups. You guys had me on the pull-ups. Like
pull-ups, they become your favourite, didn't they?
They were my favourite, yeah. And then I ripped out my shoulder again. I was like, damn. But Tim educated me. Tim took me through my paces and really taught me a lot about just being active and staying focused and real dedication and like checking my meals. And he held me accountable for myself. And yeah, just like you're the gatekeeper, man. We appreciate you.
I don't know about
that. Yeah.
But you know what is funny is, I remember in year 7 at school, we did all the basketball and everything, and you were about a foot taller than anyone else in the whole year. And you were obviously meant to play for the basketball team. And I had a passion for basketball at the time. But your dad was a football coach, and you were like, no, I'm just going to play football. And then you came to training one time, and you were like, nah, that's all right. And then you were like, oh, it's my name on the football team sheet. My name on the football. I was like, Shane, can you please come and play basketball? You're a foot taller than everyone else, and you can jump higher than everyone else. And you're like, oh, I'm not sure. And then I'd like to take credit for being the one that was actually got you into Barcelona in the first place.
Take credit for it, mate. It was you. It was all you. I remember. Do you know what I remember us at the at the thing, and you're just like, why are you playing basketball?
I was livid.
Oh. All right, Tim, last question.
Are you going to catch me out again? Is this another? Yeah,
just a little bit. All right. So you go back in time and you bump into 16-year-old Tim. What advice are you giving 16-year-old Tim?
I was hoping you'd ask this, actually, because when you first came to me saying you wanted to do a podcast, I thought, this is what I would say to myself. This is advice I would give people. Or I would like to give myself if I was younger. And the advice I would give to myself if I was 16 is, and I've touched on it earlier, actually, when I was talking about opening a gym, is you need to take yourself seriously, because if you don't take yourself seriously, no one else will take you seriously. And you won't go anywhere. You know me. I didn't open that gym until I was 28, maybe 29, just 29 or about to turn 29. And it took me that long to take myself seriously enough to be like, you can do this. I was just bumbling along kind of thing. Mm. And it was just like a pipe dream. It was never going to happen. If I was going to go back and go, look, if you've got dreams, you take them seriously, because if you don't, no one else is going. And if you've got someone that you can confide in who will take you seriously, keep them close to you and just tell them, man. Like, I said to the salesman as well, who's selling the franchises, can I have one of those things? And I expect him to laugh at me because it was just such a ridiculous thing. But he was just like, yeah, he took me seriously.
Yeah.
And people do. If you say you've got a dream, you want to do something, you tell people about it. If they laugh at you, you don't want them anyway. Tell your friends what you want to do. If they laugh at you and they doubt you and stuff, are they really your friends?
Amen, bro.
You know what I mean? And so it took me getting a wife, really, to get to that point where I was ready to take myself seriously.
I think that's all we need, man. Just someone to balance out our feminine energy, and who better than a female? That's what it is, man. Tim, it's been a pleasure, bro.
Thanks, Shane.
No worries, man.
It has actually been emotional.
It has. Yeah. I think this is the most emotional thing I've got on my days.
I cry all the time.
But, yeah, man. Always, big love. It's good to see you. And when all this COVID-19 lockdown is finished, I'm coming for dinner.
Yo, guys. So like I said, man, that's Tim Harris. Good friends, more like a brother. And what I really want to kind of say right now is his advice that he gave really stuck with me. And if I could echo what he said, take yourself seriously, because if you don't, no one else will. No truer words spoken. Tim, I just want to take this time to thank you for your honesty and for your contribution to the Shack. Big love, man, always. Okay, people, so that wraps it up for another episode of the Shack. Stay tuned for more. I've been your host, Shane Sanderford. Peace.